Good evening and welcome to our services tonight. We are so glad to have each and every one. We have visitors among us tonight and we appreciate your presence and we welcome you back and hope you can come back when you can. And for the members here, glad to see you and glad to be back as well. We're concluding our February series tonight, but wanted to give you another look at the March sermon series that is coming up. Of course, on that first Sunday, next Sunday, is our start of our gospel meeting, so with Brother Steve Klein and Jerry Sandusky. So we look forward to having both of them with us this week. And so our sermon series for March is Looking to Jesus. Looking to Jesus. We'll be talking about authority, right living, hope, mercy, forgiveness, the true church, salvation, and restoring the church. So come back for these back in March and tell others about what we are going to be studying about. We're going to finish tonight talking about a woman. And Sister Joanne Sandlin always asks me, when are you going to preach on women? And I'll say, well, I don't know when. I said, well, why do you want to know? She said, because it'll be a short sermon. So, well, I don't know about being a short sermon or not, but we have tonight talking about a lady that we'll get to in just a moment. But first, I wanted to read the passages from Proverbs chapter 31, talking about a virtuous woman. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband does safely trust in her so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant ship. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it is yet night and gives meat to her household, a portion to her maidens. She considers a field and buys it, and in the fruit of her hands, and she plants a vineyard, and she girds her loins with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth out not out by night. She lays her hands to the spindle, and her hands holds the distaff. She stretches out her hand to the poor, yes, she reaches forth her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household. For all her house that are clothed with scarlet. She makes herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. Her husband is known in the gates and when he sits among the elders of the land. She maketh fine linen and sells it. She delivers girdles unto the merchants. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she rejoices in the time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She looks well to the ways of her household and eats not the bread of idleness. Her children rise up, and they call her blessed. Her husband also, he praises her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. Favor is deceitful, and beauty is vain. But a woman that fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands. Let her own works praise her in the gates. When we think of worthy women, when we think of virtuous women in the Bible, who comes to mind? Think about that just for a moment. Who comes to mind when you think of a virtuous woman, someone from the Bible? What about someone from this congregation? What about some of those that have gone on before us? Are any of those descriptions a description of those ladies? You may think of Deborah, who led Israel to battle against the captain of the Canaanites. You may have thought of Esther, who saved her nation from extinction under the wicked Haman. Somebody might have even thought of Rahab, who declared her faith in Jehovah's, his ability to conquer Canaan by hiding the two spies. You might have thought of Elizabeth, the mother of John the Baptist. You might have thought of Mary, who gave birth to Jesus. You might have thought of Mary and Martha, those sisters sisters of Lazarus, who loved Jesus. You might have thought of Naomi and Ruth. Many others, other names that you might have chosen, all of who these people are very significant and they are important in the Bible. And some of you might have thought about Lydia. Tonight we're going to be talking about Lydia. Lydia, as we look in If we look here in Acts chapter 16 through 18, we can back at the chapter 15 of Acts. Paul and Silas, they've begun their second missionary journey from Antioch of Syria. And when they come to Derbe and they go to Lystra, and Timothy joins them. And in chapter 16, verse 1, Timothy will join them. And they go through Phrygia, they go through Galatia, and they want to go into Asia. But the Holy Spirit forbade them. He would not let them go. And so they traveled to Mysia, and they tended to preach in Bithynia, but the Spirit suffered them not in chapter 16, verse 7. So they come to Troas, and there Luke joins them, and Paul has a vision of this man of Macedonia, and this man is saying in chapter 16, verse 9, he says, "Come over into Macedonia and help us." So here they're at Troas, and he has this vision, and this vision said, "Come over to Macedonia, come and help us." And so in verse 10 of chapter 16, it says, "After he had seen the vision, immediately we endeavored to go into Macedonia. We gathered things that the Lord had called for us to preach the gospel unto them." So he's deciding, you know what, I need to go preach the gospel in Macedonia. So here we go. So they loosed from Troas, and they came straightway to Samothracia. And the next day they were at Neapolis, and from thence to Philippi, which is the chief city of the port of the part of Macedonia. So they land in Philippi, the chief city, a colony, and they stay there for a few days. And while they're there, they come upon in verse 13. It says they were under the Sabbath, and we went out of the city by the riverside. Here on the riverside, Paul and his company, they find something. Here is where prayer was wont to be made. It was customary here for a prayer to be made here out by the riverside. They sat down and they started speaking unto the women which resorted thither. He says, so they're here and they come here, and there's a group of women who are here praying by the riverside. And a certain woman named Lydia, a seller of purple of the city of Thyatira, which worshipped God, heard us, and whose heart the Lord opened, that she attended unto the things which were spoken of Paul. And when she was baptized in her household, she besought us, saying, If you have judged me and be faithful to the Lord, come into my house and abide there. And she constrained us. So what do we have here? We have a picture of this person named Lydia. Just a very few verses about Lydia. But in these few verses, there's a lot of information about Lydia. We know where she's from. We know that the work that she does. We know a little bit about her character. We know, and we definitely can see the heart that Lydia has. We can also see the influence that Lydia has over her family. And we also see from Lydia, from these few verses, the obedience that she gave. So as we look and we're talking about Lydia and her conversion, we can see the prospect of her, Lydia. Was she a potential convert? Would she have been a person that you would have considered, you know, I need to share the gospel with this person? Was she a person that, you know, might have been on your radar? Do we have people on our radar, people that we know need to obey the gospel, but they haven't? And if we have people on our radar, are we actively seeking to spread the gospel? So as we think about that, think about Lydia here. And here Lydia, as we said, she is from Thyatira. She's not a native of Philippi, where Paul meets her. And she's from Thyatira, about 300 miles from Philippi. And here she is. And why is she here? Well, we know she's here praying at the riverside, but we also know that Thyatira is where they did sell a lot of purple. And so here is one port city to another port city. She's carrying her things there to sell her goods. You notice, and also about Thyatira, that Thyatira, if you remember, is also one of those seven churches of Asia, that was mentioned in Revelation chapter 1. So we see here that she's from Thyatira, but she's also a seller of purple. Now, whether this was the seller of actually the cloth purple or the dye purple, doesn't really say. But regardless, those things, the seller of purple, the purple was very expensive. It was associated with royalty. When you look in Luke chapter 19, chapter 16, verse 19, you can see here that there was a certain rich man who was clothed in purple, and fine linen, and fared sumptuously every day. So here she dealt with people who were rich. She sold to individuals who were rich. And so here you imagine she is probably a very successful businesswoman. In this business that she has, you know, if it was her own business or if she was doing it for her husband, doesn't say if she was married or not. But here you can tell that she was very successful. She was also very spiritual. Can you be both? Can you be successful and be spiritual? Or is everyone like the rich man who doesn't want to give away all the riches? Well, when we think about this, and we think about what we can learn from Lydia, we can see that she is 300 miles away, yet she has priorities in her life. And here we ask, what is she seeking most? What is she seeking most? Was she seeking the riches of the world? Do we seek, is that what we seek the most? Do we seek riches of the world? In Matthew chapter 13, verse 22, it said, "He also that received the seed among the thorns is he that hears the word, and the care of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becomes unfruitful." You see, if our priority is not on God and our priority is on those riches, then we're going to get choked out. The world will choke us out. But as we learn from Lydia, that's not what she's doing. Lydia is very focused on, she is there with these other women. She is praying. She is fellowshipping with these other ladies. So she's not seeking those riches of the world. And when we think about what Jesus told the rich man in chapter 19, verse 21, he says, "If thou would be perfect," he said, "you go and you sell those things. You give to the poor. And you shall have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me." See, that's what he didn't want to do. But the key there is that the rich man did not, he had the wrong priority. His heart was in the wrong place. Lydia, where is her heart? It is there with the other women, is there praying to God. So we know that we are not to lay up our treasures. Jesus said again in Matthew chapter 6, 19 through 21, "Lay not up yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal." He said, you lay up for yourself treasures where? In heaven. That's where it's not going to be corrupted. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Where was Lydia's heart? Where was Lydia's heart? Her job was not more important than her service to God. You can see that from her. She could have been on this day. She could have been selling like probably everybody else that was there. She could have been making some profit, but she was by the riverside with the other women praying. She was also, as we said, she's from Thyatira. She's a seller of purple, but she was, as you see, as we've already talked, she was a religious person. She's described as a worshiper of God. Think about the significance of that. 300 miles away, and what is she doing? If you're 300 miles away, say you're on vacation, is meeting with other religious folks, is that a priority? It was to Lydia. When I leave and I go on a vacation, is that a priority for me? Or do we go and we forget all about worshiping God? You know, she reminds me a whole lot of Cornelius. She reminds me of Cornelius. Cornelius, he was devout. He was someone who feared God. He was one that gave alms to the people. Here you have Lydia is very much like that. Both of these individuals were very good people. They were very good things, and we can talk about the character, but like Cornelius, Lydia also is lost. Lydia does not have Jesus. And when we are good, God-fearing folks, but you may still be God-fearing, you may still not have Jesus. But she knows, we're going to see here in just a moment, she knows that she's going to need Jesus. She's someone who was praying. Wasn't Cornelius doing that? He prayed. Do we make prayer a priority in our lives? 1 Thessalonians 5:17, pray without ceasing. Romans 12:12, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer. Philippians 4:6, be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication. With thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. Do we make prayer a priority in our life? We can learn that from Lydia. Lydia made praying a priority in her life, even though she wasn't a Christian. Not only was she religious, but Lydia was also a very hospitable person. Lydia, she was given to the generous reception of guests. She had a friendly welcoming to the guests and visitors. Here, what is she telling them after she's baptized? She's saying, well, won't you come to my house? How hospitable are we? Do we invite others into our home? And I know some of you do. I saw an invitation at my mom's today that I know there's people that invite people to their house. Are we hospitable at church? When we have visitors, are we a hospitable group of Christians here at O'Neill? When we have visitors, can someone who is visiting leave this assembly and they go, and maybe they might post on Facebook, hey, I was at O'Neill tonight and they were the best group of they were the friendliest congregation, or would they leave and say, you know what, I only had one or two people to talk to me when I was there and I will never step foot there again? Have you read people's comments that say those types of things? Not necessarily about O'Neill, but about other places. And we see, as we even go to at the end of chapter 16, one more verse about Lydia. When Paul and Silas, they're released from prison after the conversion of the Philippian jailer. In verse 40, he says, when Paul and Silas left the prison, they returned to the home of Lydia. She was very hospitable. She was welcome. She was opening her home to others. Do we do that? As Christians, do we open our home to other people? I know of many stories of the Lovells. I know that I've heard talking in class and from things of how they always had people coming in their house. If someone was coming for a meeting, they would have them in their house, Buzz and Steve's parents. Are we that kind of people? Something else about Lydia was that she had an open heart. In Romans 1:16, we know that the gospel is the power of God unto salvation. We know that it's to everyone that believes, not just to the Jews, but also to the Greek. Everyone. The gospel is open for all. And so she had her heart open. So how does he open it? He opens it through the gospel. On that day of Pentecost, when we know that from Acts chapter 2, verse 37, that when they heard this, what were they hearing? They had just heard in verse 36, they had just heard that God made Jesus, whom they had crucified, both Lord and Christ. They had just been told that they had crucified the Son of God. And what did it do? It pricked their heart. It pricked their heart, and it pricked their heart so much that they wanted to know what they should do to be saved. They knew that they were lost. That's what the gospel does. That's what the gospel did for Lydia. She, whenever Paul and them are talking, she hears this. And she decides, you know, there's something that I need to do. Paul, as he's preaching in Acts chapter 26, delivering thee from the people, from the Gentiles, unto whom now I send thee, says, to open their eyes, to turn them from darkness to light, from the power of Satan unto God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and the inheritance among them which are sanctified by faith that is in me. You see, the gospel, what does it do? It opens the eyes to the light. By obeying it, we receive forgiveness of sins. And being faithful to it, we receive an inheritance. Do we have an open heart? Do we have an open heart? You see, she heard. And when we go back to those verses, what did she do? She heard us. The Lord opened her heart because she was listening to those things that Paul said. And whenever she opened her heart, look at verse 15. Whenever her heart was, she heard those things. Her heart was open to those things. She had to have believed them. Because what did she do? It says that she was baptized, her and her household. The Scriptures tell us, as we can see here in this, that the Lord opened her heart. And it implies that if He opened her heart had to be what? It had to be closed. Her heart had to be closed at some point. What does that mean, that her heart was closed? Her heart was closed to the same sense that even in every other Jewish person's heart. It was closed toward Christ. She didn't know Jesus. She hadn't been told the story of Jesus. She hadn't been told of His death, of His burial, of His resurrection. She didn't know those things. But when she heard them, what did she do? There was a response, wasn't there? When we look in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, starting in verse 20, Paul says, "Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? For after that is the wisdom of God. The world by wisdom knew not God. It pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe." The foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. For the Jews, what did they do? They required a sign. The Greeks, they sought after wisdom. But Paul said, "We preach Christ crucified." And to this, preaching about Christ, about Him being crucified, to the Jews, what was it? It was a stumbling block. To the Greeks, it was foolishness to even hear such a thing. But to them which are called, those of the Jews or the Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. That's what the gospel can do. That, my friends, is what the gospel does. Why was her heart open? It was open because of the gospel, just like it had pricked those individuals on the day of Pentecost. So is her heart pricked, that she is willing to obey it. Now we see that the hardening of we can talk about the hardening and opening of hearts, it depends on the heart. We see how Pharaoh, how he would say, "Okay, I'm going to let him go," but then he hardened his heart and then he wouldn't let him go. We see in Acts chapter 20, as I just said in chapter 2, verse 20-37, their hearts were open, they were pricked, they knew they had done something, they needed not to be lost, they wanted to be saved. Isn't it interesting that people's reaction to the gospel is very similar to clay and butter when you put those things before the sun? You see, clay, what happens to it? When you put it in the sun, it hardens. What happens to butter when you put it in the sun? It melts. Which kind of heart are we? Which kind of heart was Lydia? Sometimes, you know, people will say, and they'll talk about, you know, this opening of the heart. Why is one heart open? Why is another one not? And you know, why is God doing that? And they, you know, God is choosing this. Is that what really happens? And if that's what happens, if God is the one choosing whose heart is open and whose heart He's going to close, then He is a respecter of persons. But we know from Romans chapter 2, verse 11, that He's not a respecter of person. And if this be the case, then the gospel is powerless. But we know from Romans 1:16 that it is very powerful. And if that be the case, then Christ didn't die for everybody. He just died for those very few whose hearts are open. But we know from Hebrews chapter 2, verse 9 that that's not the case. And if that's the case, that He chooses, then we don't have free will. But we know when we read through Romans 6 that we know we do. It's our decision, our choices. You know, and if a heart's not open, if that's the case, what are people going to do? It's God's fault that this person didn't become a Christian. And we know that's not the case. Lydia, she heard the word and then she obeyed it. We see that she heard. She attended to those things which were spoken of Paul. Look at the other versions real quickly, what they said about that. I thought that was a very interesting part of the verse. One said the Lord opened her heart to respond to Paul's message. Another version says, whose heart the Lord opened to give heed unto the things which were spoken by Paul. Another version, as she listened to us, the Lord opened her heart and she accepted what Paul was saying. She heard. She took to heart. She attended to those things. Did they twist her arm? Nowadays, it seems like you have to just, it's almost like you have to grab somebody by the arm and pull them into the water. Why was it so easy then, but so difficult now, when someone knows what to do, that they keep putting it off? I know someone, probably they're probably in their 80s by now, and I have talked with this individual about becoming a Christian, and they know, but they just won't. They won't become a Christian. But when she hears, she attends to those things, and she obeys the gospel. And not only that, look at Lydia. The influence that she had on her family. What influence do you have on your family? When she was baptized, and her household. Kind of like Cornelius and his household. But when it gets down to it, those who were baptized were those who believed, those who had sin that needed to repent, and those definitely who are the sinners who need their sins washed away, those are the ones who are to be baptized. So as we look at Lydia tonight, what can we learn? We can learn that her example inspires us to attend to the things which God has us to do. What reason do you have tonight which God will accept for not obeying the gospel if you know you need to? In 2 Thessalonians 1, verse 7 through 9, and to you who are troubled, rest with us when the Lord Jesus shall be revealed from heaven with his mighty angels in flaming fire, taking vengeance on them that know not God and them that obey not the gospel of Jesus Christ, who shall be punished with an everlasting destruction from the presence of the Lord and from the glory of his power. It's Lydia didn't want that. Many people in this room, most people in this room, don't want that. But those who reject it and keep putting it off, that might be the judgment that you get if your life ends before you become a Christian. Just like this morning, that surviving the flood was quite easy. God gave directions on what you need to do. And to become a Christian, he gave us directions. Have you heard? Have you believed? Have you repented? Have you confessed? Here is water. What's hindering you from being baptized? If you're a Christian and you've fallen away, come back tonight as we stand and as we sing.